it was my only chance of a piece of happiness in this world.
That's really how bad things were? I mean, were you actually thinking about ending your life?
Yeah.
Until his doctor prescribed medical marijuana. Only problem? It is illegal in the UK, though many doctors have started recommending it.
That was Dr. Sanjay Gupta reporting from the UK. DeanBeckerDrugTruth.net.
You are listening to KPFT Houston 90.1 and HD1. Coming up next is something a little different, but I think I'll let him explain. We'll be back shortly.
We don't mind. See, we've been doing it all the time. But if you want us to sacrifice, you and I get it without a price. We don't mind. See, we've been doing it all the time. But if you want us to sacrifice, you got to give something back to life. You think I'm vulnerable to your pressure tactics because I shed a tear, because I shed a tear. You think I'm vulnerable to your violence just because I'm sitting here, because I'm sitting here. But my babies came into this world, y'all, without a single fear. So they had no fear because the seven generations before me, they all fought to get us here. To get us here, but I say we don't mind. See, we've been doing it all the time. But if you want us to sacrifice, you and I get it without a price. But I say we don't mind. See, we've been doing it all the time. But if you want us to sacrifice, something back to life. Yeah, just coming here like that no more. Snatch up our childhood, our childhood. You can't just walk on up and replace it, yo. With your Hollywood, with your Hollywood. But I see now how all of the words you say, they can misconstrue. It's gonna misconstrue.
There we go. Hi, and welcome to Earth 101. My name is Mike Honig. I am sitting in today for Hitaji Abdulaziz. And this is going to be a call-in show. We're going to talk to my guest for a little while, and then I will be inviting people to call and ask questions or offer comments or thoughts. The call-in number is 713-526-KPFT, or if you're a number person and you prefer it, it's 713-526-5738. My guest today is Susan Long. She's been a Quaker for 21 years and is a member of the Live Oak Friends Meeting in the Shady Acres area of the Heights. And I think this is going to be a really, really interesting conversation. There may be fewer than 100,000 Quakers in all of North America. Now think about that. In all of North America, over 320 million people. The Quakers are known by most people through movies or maybe in some cases documentaries. And this makes Quakers great as plot points because really people don't know much about them. That being the case, the Quakers, known more formally as the Religious Society of Friends, are almost a part of American mythos. Most folks have never actually met a Quaker or had a chance to discuss their faith with them, and I hope to change that during this program. As I said, my guest today is Susan Long, a longtime Quaker. She's currently a member of the Live Oaks Friends meeting in the Shady Acres area of the Heights on 26th Street between Couch and, I believe it's called Beavis, and I always think of Butthead when I say that street, but Beavis. Bevis? That's what my GPS says is Bevis. So between Beavis and Couch, and she currently has the title of Clerk of the Meeting. How are you doing today, Susan?
I'm doing great.
Terrific. I appreciate your being here. I think this will be intriguing. I pulled up some numbers from a site called Quaker Information Center, and I should note that I normally do a show called Think Wing Radio, which, shameless plug, I will be doing on FM starting December 11th at 10 p.m. Wednesdays. And when I do a show, I am in the habit of doing some research, and typically that takes me to certain links where I draw my information. And I like to put those links on my show announcement so that if you have a question about something I have said, you can look at the source. And if you want to email me or call me on my next show and question it, I feel like, you know, education should be what we do. On the site Quaker Information Center, and that's thinkwingradio.com, by the way, as of about 2007, the world membership count for the Religious Society of Friends was about 359,000. That's worldwide. In North America, they're about 30% of that number. And in 2007, there may be a 2010 census, I don't know, but these are the numbers I've got. As of 2007, adult membership, not counting children, would be a little under 90,000. So I would say, allowing for passing time, let's say somewhere under 100,000 in the United States out of the entire population of over 300 million. So it's a small creed, and yet because they're so useful in plots and stories and because they're so important in American history, which we'll talk about a little bit, they're well known of but not well known about.
True.
So, Susan, tell us a little about the society, the Religious Society of Friends. Tell us a little about why the name Quakers has attached itself, and just kind of a little basic history.
Well, the Quakers got its start in the mid-1600s in England. I was a man called George Fox that kind of came up with the idea. That it was one of many dissenting movements against the Church of England. And he called his group the Friends of Truth, which I think actually comes from the Gospel of John. And so that's where the name Friends came from. But the Friends, when they would get up to speak in meeting, which is what we call our church service, sometimes they would quake. They would not in a Pentecostal type of way, but in a sort of, this is a very momentous occasion, I'm going to get up and speak.
Nerves. Public speaking nerves.
Maybe nerves. And anyway, it kind of came around to be a pejorative term for the Friends. But the Friends adopted it as, you know, it's typically what we call ourselves, even though the official name is Religious Society of Friends.
There have been some very prominent, and I have to stick this in because this came in our conversation yesterday, and how often do you get to use it? So the early Quakers were actually among the so-called anti-disestablishmentarians.
Yeah, I believe so.
You don't get to use that word much in an actual sentence. So I just had to. I couldn't resist it. The Quakers actually have a pretty long and interesting history, and I do recommend reading the Wiki link. The Wikipedia link on my website for Quakers. It's really kind of an interesting summation. Can you tell us a little about the history of Quakers in North America? Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I'm no expert, but I know that William Penn, who was a military man in England, converted to Quakerism, which the word we use is convinced. He was a convinced Quaker, friend of George Fox. Rich had a landed family, and he was able to get the land that became Pennsylvania. And
Pennsylvania, by the way, for those who may not know, it's called Pennsylvania because it was, Sylvania is like a forest. So Pennsylvania translates roughly as Penn's Forest.
Right. Penn's
Just
Forest.
Trivia.
Right. So he named it Pennsylvania.
Yeah. No ego.
Right, no ego. And he brought a bunch of Quakers' friends over, and they settled Pennsylvania. And I know that his idea was some sort of Quaker utopia. And, of course, Philadelphia is the city of brotherly love. And to this day, the friends are the epicenter in North America is Philadelphia.
Now, that's interesting. The city of brotherly love is actually the loose translation of the name Philadelphia from, I guess, original Greek, is it?
Yeah, it would be Greek, yeah.
And when you put it in the context of the Quakers and the meeting of friends, that suddenly becomes
right.
a very tangibly understandable thing.
That's
that they named the city
that.
Philadelphia because of its Quaker roots.
Right, exactly.
See, I love learning stuff like that.
Now, there were other Quakers in other colonies. You know, the early Quakers felt like it was their duty to go around and convince people of the error of proselytize of the error of their ways. And a lot of the colonies were settled by Puritans, of course. And the Puritans didn't really allow people to come in and talk about non-Puritan things. But a lot of the Quakers would march into town and start preaching. And I think, you know, from what I read, you know, the police or the sheriff would meet them and escort them right back out of town and or put them in jail. So there's a tradition of, you know, being jailed for your beliefs in the Quakers.
A lot of belief systems share that.
Yeah.
We will be taking phone calls in a little while. The phone number is 713-526-5738. We are talking about the Religious Society of Friends, the Quakers, where their origins are, what their practices are, what their belief systems are, and I guess in some cases whether for some of you it's worth exploring. Let's see. Actually, we were talking about the term Quaker, and according to George Fox's autobiography, a gentleman by the name of Bennett, and I should have written down his first name, was the first person that called them Quakers because, quote, and I'm guessing this is from George Fox, because, quote, I bade them tremble at the word of the Lord.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's Wikipedia, so maybe right, maybe wrong, maybe somewhere in between. Now, broadly speaking, there are sort of three denominations of Quakers in modern America.
There have been, of course, in all denominations, some splits and rearrangements. So today we've got basically three types of Quakers, people that call themselves Quakers. My group is associated with the organization Friends General Conference, and we are the so-called unprogrammed Quakers.
Friends General Conference.
Friends General Conference.
Is that a local term, or is that...
Friends General Conference is an organization in Philadelphia that...
So it's regional or national in terms of its
national.
Influence?
It's the U.S.,
okay.
Maybe North America.
Okay.
And the individual meetings can... associate themselves with a Friends General Conference to be part of the larger Friends Society. But the Friends General Conference friends are the so-called unprogrammed friends. We don't have a hired minister. We meet in a meeting house. We have unprogrammed worship on Sundays, which means there's no prepared schedule
or sermon
or anything like that. There was a split in the 1800s between the friends that our type of friends, who are also not very, how should I put this? We don't put priority on Scripture, and the friends that wanted to put priority on Scripture. This is one of the fundamental things about friends. But there was a split, and Friends United Meeting is another Quaker organization. I think they're based in Indiana. That they have more church-oriented. They will have hired ministers. They may have churches, and they're more Christocentric is the word that we use. And then there's evangelical.
In lay language, they would be more Christ-centered.
Right. And then we have Evangelical Friends International, which is an organization I believe got started in the 30s. And they're actually probably the most numerous group of friends in North America anyway, and there's quite a few of them in other countries. And they have churches and ministers and stained glass and pews and
more recognizable as a traditional-looking church
group. And there's several in Houston, and the most distinguished one, I guess you could say, is the one in Friendswood. There's a beautiful
which
church.
Which is named after
Which is
Quakers,
named after
the Friends.
Right.
Little
which is very
interesting. Yes, it is.
That you would have something like that in Texas, because really there's not that many Friends and Quakers in Texas.
Would you guess or guesstimate how many Quakers there are in Texas or in the metro Houston area? Do you have any sense of that at all?
Well, in our meeting, I would say we have about 100. Well, we have more like 200 people on our mailing list. We have about 65 members, and then we have a bunch of attenders. That's just local. There's a very small meeting in Galveston. There's meetings in Dallas, Fort Worth, Austin, San Antonio, the Valley, other places in Texas.
So are we talking hundreds or low thousands in the state,
in
let's
Texas?
Say?
Yeah. I would say less than 1,000 unprogrammed Quakers in the state.
Okay. All right. It's time for us to take a break for traffic. This is KPFT 90.1 FM. You're listening to Earth 101. I'm Mike Koenig sitting in for Hitachi. And let's go to Ann for traffic.
All right. It's currently 38 degrees, and tonight should be a low of 34 degrees, partly cloudy with rain. As far as traffic, there is a large accident, Hardy Toll Road southbound at Cross Timber Street, with a heavy truck stall taking up a main lane and a shoulder lane. Also, some major street incidents, the 12,000 block of Westheimer Road, the 11,000 block of Beamer Road, the 4,200 block of Drake Street at Fairmont, the 6,700 block of Cullen Boulevard, and 700 Bagby Street at Capitol Street. There is a traffic signal outage. We now return to Think Wing Radio.
Well, that's actually very generous of you. I'm substituting for Hitachi, and her show is Earth 101. What I do is called Think Wing Radio, and I'll be doing a regular show starting December 11th, Wednesdays at 10 p.m. after Technology Bites. This is KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. The call-in number is 713-526-5738. And today I'm talking to Susan Long, and we're discussing the Quaker faith, the Religious Society of Friends. So Quakers still sort of geographically centered in and around Philadelphia and Pennsylvania, and that may play into the question of, do Quakers sometimes get confused with Amish?
Yeah, I think so, because there's a view or a stereotype of Quakers as wearing, you know, the hats and the gray clothes, the simple clothes, and living simply, like you see in Friendly Persuasion, for example, that movie, which is a great movie. I love that movie. Those particular Quakers were Quakers that had withdrawn from society and did live a very simple life and wear plain dress, is what we call it, which, of course, is what the Amish does now. And also the Amish, as I understand it, are a peace church. They believe in nonviolence and promote nonviolence, and so do we. That's what we do.
But there are much stricter religious groups.
Yeah, they're more Bible, Christocentric. I'm saying, I don't know anything about the Amish.
To my knowledge.
But
and also they're German, or perhaps Dutch by origin.
Yeah.
When they're called Pennsylvania Dutch, that's, I think, actually an English corruption of Pennsylvania Deutsch,
right,
which is what they call themselves, because that's the word for German in German.
Right.
So to the extent that there is confusion between some of the Quakers and some of the Amish, it's really a cosmetic confusion.
Right.
that there are some groups of Quakers who may dress in a similar like way to the Amish.
Right.
But as Buster Crabbe used to say on a commercial, that's where the similarity ends.
Yeah. I would say so. I think we probably do still have some Quakers that dress in plain dress.
Is there a particular denomination that sort of leans that way that you know of?
Well, there's a group. All right, I think you've almost gotten beyond my area of expertise.
Well, that's okay.
But there's
that's what Google is for.
Yeah, there is a group called Conservative Friends, and they're not associated, as far as I know, with any of the three large groups I mentioned. But they're sort of a Midwestern group, and they are, as I understand it, very Christocentric. But their style of worship is more like ours with the meeting houses. And I think a lot of them will tend to, or some of them, that maybe a higher concentration will tend to wear plain dress. Now, we all need to check that on Google because I'm actually not really sure.
Well, what's the expression? Google before you write is the new think before you speak. That's an expression I've heard. Tell us a little about the Quakers' creed. Now, one of the interesting things that we discussed the other night was that, strictly speaking, the Quakers don't consider their building a church.
It's a meeting house.
Now, it's kind of funny. I live in the area of your meeting house, and, of course, everyone calls it the church. It's like we're across the street from the church, down the block from the church. It's the steel building church. Actually, as you pointed out to me, the technicality is that it is not considered a sanctified building like a church might be. It is simply a meeting house for friends.
Right. And, of course, there's no steeple. It doesn't look like a church, does it?
It doesn't. But that never stopped people from misappropriating
a
word.
Yeah, everybody calls it a church. And that's fine because that's the common word. And, you know, we always say meeting house. Or going to meeting instead of going to church. It's not a sanctified space. You know, a Quaker would not say that any place was any better than any other place for having worship. But we do have a very nice meeting house.
It's a beautiful meeting house, and we're going to talk about that. The call-in number is 713-526-5738. If you have questions about the Quaker faith, or if you have questions for Susan or comments, if you are a Quaker yourself and you'd like to contribute, or if you're curious about the Quakers, the Religious Society of Friends, do please feel free to call 713-526-5738. So the Quakers, as with any faith, is it fair to call it a faith?
Yeah, it's all right.
Yeah, it's interesting. We have a little trouble with some of the accepted definitions of words.
Well,
that people
you
use.
Can say that. I mean, a lot of Quakers are kind of including me, are kind of uncomfortable with the stereotypical trappings of religion, you know, and so faith. Yeah, we can call it a faith. It is a religion.
Yeah. Let's start with this, and then we're going to get into that, because I think that starts to take us into really important and complex territory. Let's talk about the testimonies that the Quakers believe in as kind of the foundation of their belief system.
Right.
Simplicity, peace, integrity, community, equality. Do you think you can somehow expand on that for us? Maybe tie it together in terms of an overall worldview?
Well, George Fox and the early Quakers, one of the many things that they were reacting against with the Church of England was the idea that you had to subscribe to a particular creed in order to be a good person, let's say, or one of the chosen ones. And so they rejected the idea of a creed.
That a good person required that the person subscribe to dogma.
Yeah, or even to belong to the church or anything. So like, no, we don't have any beliefs that you must subscribe to, but that we have these things called testimonies, and they're really intended to be sort of a way of living your life.
Now, according to some of the literature that I picked up at the meeting hall, Quaker testimonies. This is, I'm now reading. Mm-hmm. Quakers experience the divine effects, what we do in our personal lives, what we believe, and changes we work for in the wider world. The testimonies are what Quakers call the ways we have found to live and act based on our beliefs. And this explanation goes on to read, as a group, we find that listening to and following God leads to integrity, living as a whole people who act on what we believe, tell the truth, and do what we say we will do. Simplicity, focusing on what is truly important and letting other things fall away. Equality, treating everyone everywhere as equally precious to God, recognizing that everyone has gifts to share. Community, supporting one another in our faith journeys and in times of joy and sorrow, sharing with and caring for each other. Peace, seeking justice and healing for all people, taking away the causes of war in the ways we live. And care for the earth, valuing and respecting all of God's creation, using only our fair share of the earth's resources, working for policies that protect the planet. And I think that that probably follows the sort of general instinctive sense of how most people think of the Quakers, although maybe they could not have verbalized it in quite that way. Your particular meeting is different from the vast majority of Friends meetings. 90%, according to the number that I saw, about 90% of Friends meetings are either programmed or partially programmed.
I can believe
it's not
that.
Traffic time, Ann, is it?
You have 5 more minutes.
Okay, because I see this big red light saying traffic time.
Oh, that might be left over from last time.
Okay, so it'll just remind me that in 5 more minutes
I'll take
it
away and I'll put it back in 5
minutes.
Great. Okay.
Thank you. So 90% are either programmed or somewhat programmed.
Semi-programmed.
And then we have the unprogrammed, which is what the Live Oak Friends are. Explain a little bit about how important that difference is between programmed or some version of programmed versus the unprogrammed of the Live Oaks Friends.
Well, of course, we feel it's very important. George Fox, going back to George Fox, rejected hired ministers, people that you paid to minister to you.
Hirelings is the semi-pejorative term.
Hireling minister was his phrase. Those are loaded words to a Quaker, hireling minister. So we minister to each other. We're all ministers in the meeting. There are no symbols,
there is an absence of crosses and icons and imagery in stained glass and
right,
such as that.
It's right. A very in our meeting.
It's a lovely but very simple building.
Right. Whereas a semi-programmed or a Friends church might include those things. It's unprogrammed in the sense that there is no preparation, there is no plan for what will happen during the meeting for worship, as opposed to deciding what songs you're going to sing or preparing a sermon or, thinking of a particular Bible verse to read. Everybody comes in with no plan and sit down, sit in the silence. Wait on the light is the terminology we would use. And if somebody feels inspired to speak, has a message, as we would call it, to share with the community, share with the group, then they can get up and share that. But, hopefully it wasn't pre-planned.
I am here with Susan Fox of the Live Oak Friends Meeting, the Quakers. You are listening to KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. I am Mike Honig, sitting in for Hitaji, Earth 101. The show that I do is called Think Wing Radio, and I'll be starting a new FM broadcast of that Wednesdays from 10 to 11 p.m. starting December 11th after Technology Bites. And they're great guys, and I'm very excited at following them with a show. And I believe we are now again time for traffic.
All right. Still some of the same accidents to deal with. Hardy Toll Road southbound at Cross Timber Street. Heavy truck with a stall affecting a main lane and a shoulder lane. Also, street incidents. You have 11,000 block of Beamer Road, the 4200 block of Drake Street at Fairmont, and also the 6700 block of Cullen Boulevard. Right now it's 38 degrees with a low tonight of 34 degrees, partly cloudy with some rain. We now return to Earth 101 with Mike. Better?
Yes. Okay, thank you. Yeah. Anne was very kind because she saw that I was chatting with Susan and she didn't want to jump into me while I was chatting with Susan.
Yay.
You see, now that's professionalism. Professionalism. So, Susan, one of the more important tenets, perhaps the most important tenet of the Society of Religious Friends, the Quakers, is the peace testimony.
Right. And it tends to be the one that causes people the most trouble.
And is the greatest plot point in movies.
Right, because you have, in front of
High Noon, Grace Kelly.
Friendly Persuasion, the son of the Quaker family wants to go off and fight in the war, and that's a problem for his family. My own father decided to go fight in World War II. Who was a Quaker, decided to go fight in World War II.
And that was an enormous spiritual question for him.
Yeah, he had to think about it, but that's what he decided to do, and his meeting did not reject him because of that. Of course, you have a lot of other Quakers that were conscientious objectors during World War II or the Vietnam War, for example.
Some of those ended up going into non-combat positions to honor their conscientious
right.
objector status while not actually killing people.
Right, right. So
medics in positions
right.
like that.
So that is, it's very possible to do that. Yeah.
It takes more courage to go out there without a gun. In some ways.
Yeah, maybe. I would think. I don't know. I know from talking to people that were conscientious objectors, some people in our meeting that were conscientious objectors during World War II, it was actually quite difficult. It wasn't a popular thing to be a conscientious objector.
It never is during a popular war.
And it was, yeah, and it was, I think it was difficult to get that status too. So.
Yeah, because they don't want any conscientious objectors.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's
they want
go
you to
get them.
They tell you
get
to.
The Hun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
And they always figure you're just draft dodging, that there isn't any such thing
yeah.
really
yeah, yeah.
as a conscientious objector.
Yeah. So when it was formulated in the early Quakers, it had to do with rejecting all forms of outward violence, weapons. And I have the quote if you're
if
interested.
If you'd like.
Margaret Fell, who was George Fox's wife.
We're talking now like mid-17th century.
Something like that. Put it this way. All bloody principles and practices we do utterly deny, with all outward wars and strife and fightings with outward weapons, for any end or under any pretense whatsoever, and this is our testimony to the whole world. That spirit of Christ by which we are guided is not changeable so as to once command us from a thing as evil and again to move us unto it. The spirit of Christ will never move us to fight and war against any man with outward weapons. So that was the original idea. And actually, there is some suggestion that they formulated that to convince Cromwell that that they didn't have anything to worry. Cromwell didn't have anything. Didn't have to worry about the Quakers.
Ah.
There's some suggestion about that.
That's interesting.
Yeah, but it's become
history is so fascinatingly complicated, isn't it?
It is because George Fox was sort of friends with Cromwell because he rejected the monarchy, but then he kind of got in bed with Cromwell and all of his. I think it was very complicated.
Very complicated.
Anyway, it's expanded. We reject outward violence, weapons, and certainly any kind of non-physical violence as well, violence with words or actions, other kinds of actions. So and try to live a peaceful life and have that be a testimony.
I am talking to Susan Long of the Live Oak Friends Meeting. I am Mike Honig sitting in for Hitaji. And the call-in number, if you have questions or comments on our topic today, is 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. I would like to talk a little about the Live Oak meeting, mm-hmm. because that's the one that I initially became somewhat familiar with. Now, I'm going to say up front, I am not a believer. I am ethnically Jewish. I was born Jewish. Being brought up as a Jew affects my worldview in a lot of ways that go back probably centuries mm-hmm. and centuries in ancestral memory. As a non-believer, if I were seeking a place where there could be camaraderie and a place where it was one could meditate, search for serenity, not feel judged, I would have to say, if there was one place that I would go, it would absolutely be your meeting. So tell us a little about, and I think we're going to be taking a call in a minute, but tell us a little about what makes your meeting, obviously not unique because you're not the only one like that, but certainly unique in what I have seen in any kind of worship or religious context.
Well, I mean, the testimony of integrity, I think, calls for us to respect the individual, respect people, and it's not respectful. We don't really feel that proselytizing is respectful. So I think it kind of is relieves people. They expect to go into a church and sort of be buttonholed and convinced, try to talked into believing as they do. Well, we don't do that. I mean, we're happy to see you, have a cup of coffee.
Yeah, it's not low pressure, it's no pressure. It's just by example.
You know,
if you like what you feel, then come back and feel it some more.
Right. We'd be happy for you to come back. But if you don't for some reason feel it's right for you, then I mean we're not gonna force you to come back or make you feel bad for not coming back.
We're going to take a call from Don. Hey, Don, you're on the air. Where are you calling from?
Car in Crosby.
Ah.
But I pulled over. I'm not driving.
Excellent, because we would hate for that to happen in the middle of this conversation. So what are you thinking today about our topic?
Well, first of all, I'm enjoying it.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I have two questions.
Okay.
The first one is, does the Quaker or Friends faith evolve? You know, apparently some Protestant and Catholic beliefs change over time. And, you know, you've already talked about how there have been several splits, which is obviously one way of addressing change. The second question, which is related to the first question, is there any consideration to ceasing worship on Sunday and worshiping on the Sabbath instead? And I don't mean anything bad about all this. I'm just keenly interested.
Absolutely. That's why we're doing the show.
So Susan, I'm going to hang up and listen to your answer.
Okay.
While I drive.
Thank you so much for calling, Don. I appreciate it. Susan?
Worshiping on the Sabbath?
In other words, normally I think he's talking about churches typically worship on Sundays.
Right.
Whereas the traditional Sabbath, of course, was dusk to dusk, Friday, Saturday.
Oh, okay.
So when are the meetings? I think is the simplest way to put it.
The meetings are Sunday morning. And we call Sunday first day. That's another thing.
But you do have meetings on Friday nights.
Oh, those really aren't meetings. Those are to show the art. Those
okay,
are art let's, viewings.
Let's talk about that. But it's a one-hour meditation opportunity.
You can certainly do that.
I guess maybe I'm unclear. I think that on Friday nights they open the roof.
On Friday, we're not doing it right
not
now.
Not right
because
now.
We have
it's
a problem,
broken.
But yeah, normally on Friday nights around dusk, they will open the Sky Space. It's a Sky Space by mm-hmm. James Turrell, and you can enjoy the experience. But that is not a meeting for worship. That is an opportunity to view the art.
Do people use it as an opportunity to meditate, or does it tend to be
chatty?
Yeah,
I'm sure they do. Okay. I think, you know, we want, it's not real chatty. I mean, I think you can have some discussion, but not so, we don't really encourage it so much that you would disturb other people. Whereas in a meeting for worship, if you don't have, if you're not giving a message, you really do need to be quiet.
Okay, so let's then try to address Don's questions. Change and evolution of the Society of Friends over time. Obviously, there have been divisions. So apparently there is some evolution, some change. And I suppose down the road, if somebody wants something a little more programmed, but not as programmed as semi-programmed, I guess somebody can start something else. You know, one person, I think we discussed this last night, one person is an opinion, two people is a belief, and three people is a schism.
Things have changed. I mean, the way George Fox started it, I mean, I think the meetings for worship would go on for hours, and he did preach from the Bible, and I think he even thumped the Bible a little bit. And now, the Friends churches, like I said, are probably more oriented towards the Bible. But George Fox also didn't rejected meeting in what he called the steeple house. It was his word for a church. So they were very much in favor of rejecting the symbolism, the sacraments, rites, rituals, anything. They found that to be distracting from the pure sort of relationship that you have with God.
And what about Sunday meetings? Are your meetings exclusively held on Sunday mornings?
Well, we have a meeting at 10:30 in the morning on Sundays. We have an early meeting at 8:30 in the morning on Sundays. And then we have a midweek meeting at 7-ish on Wednesday evenings.
Do you want to give the website so people, if they're curious, can investigate your meeting?
Our website is www.friendshouston.org.
That's one word, friendshouston.org. .org.
Right.
I am here with Susan Long of the Live Oak Friends, the Quakers. I am Mike Honig, sitting in for Hitaji Abdulaziz. The call-in number is 713-526-5738. Our next caller is Sarah. We may have to take a break in the middle of your call, Sarah, but if that happens, if you want to hold on, we can. Anne is waving her hand. Don't sweat it. Sarah, so you're on the air. Where are you calling from?
Hi, I'm calling from Houston.
Okay, and what's on your mind?
Well, I'm an anthropology student at U of H, and I'm studying Black Atlantic religions and also the anthropology of religion. And actually, today we talked about the Quakers, and we were discussing the difference between a cult and a sect and how these things move into their own religions, and about how you were talking about letting go of the rituals, or, you know, the original founder didn't like all the rituals, but it seems like meeting on a Sunday or doing these things or having the meeting is, can itself become a ritualized activity, just like anything can be, you know, brushing teeth. There's all these different kinds of rituals. But my question is, in this world, or in our culture, especially in our American culture, where you have all these different Protestant denominations and all these various forms interpretations of the Bible and all the schisms, how is it different for someone who is seeking a relationship with a higher power or God? How would you, I guess my question is, it seems like so many denominations say our way is the better way. So for someone who wasn't brought up in the Quaker religion or the Quaker belief, how do people come to terms with that, you know, coexisting or justifying their practices? Because personally, I see that that's it's difficult when there's so many different interpretations of this one book, and then everyone has an idea of what those words mean. And I think it's so different than it was 100 years ago with all the different religions. And if you have any suggestions or ways that the Quakers come to terms with that, you know, I don't know if that makes any sense. I don't know if it's more of a comment, but I just find it really interesting for people who are on a spiritual path, you know, where does one find the truth? You know?
Yeah.
Do you want to hold on while Susan
sure.
responds?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think the Quakers, you know, of course, it's very contemplative, but also we value the community. The community, we all help each other and provide sort of a test for each other with our beliefs and our leadings and our actions. And I know what you mean. You know, I was, my first marriage was into a family that was a very fundamentalist Christian family, and that was very, I wasn't a Quaker then, but, you know, it is hard to justify yourself, you know, when you're talking to somebody that believes that they are absolutely right, and this is the
only
answer,
truth,
and you just need to read this book, and you know that that doesn't, you know that that doesn't work. I don't know, you know, being part, I sure feel better about it when I talk about, we'll talk with other people from another organized religion, you know, cause I can say I'm a Quaker. I'm a Quaker. And this is what I do. And, it somehow it is a little better than just saying, oh, I'm a spiritual person and I have my own practices. You know, the difference actually may be subtle. But
I've actually had, and I'm going to break in here, pardon mm-hmm. me, I've actually had conversations now with a couple of folks from this meeting, Susan being one. There was another gentleman that I once had a lengthy conversation with. And at least for me, my sense is that it's a very live and let live. I don't even know if congregation is quite the right word.
Congregation's fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think it's a very live and let live congregation. I think if... From my outside perspective and from the couple of conversations I've had, I think if somebody is looking for some kind of communion with a higher spirit or perhaps just looking for a communion within themselves, this meeting could be something to try for a lot of those folks because it's very non-judgmental. It accepts people from many faith backgrounds, including a no-faith background.
Yeah, we've had members that identified as atheists.
So there you go.
You know,
if you're just looking for sort of peace and serenity and camaraderie and a social environment, you know, that can be seen, if you care to, as God's work as well. Sarah, what do you think? Do you have anything else you would like to add or ask?
No, it's wonderful, and I think that what's the beauty about shows like this and breaking those preconceptions or misconceptions about Quakerism and, you know, how it all, it sounds like it's a choice and it's unique and it's based on a subjective feeling and connection, especially that word that you use, community, which is so beautiful. And I think in this world of warring religions and warring ideologies, when going back to the simplicity of, you know, that kind of quote of love one another, as Jesus said, you know, it seems like that's what's happening from what I'm hearing about the Quaker meeting. And And I like how it doesn't sound so dogmatic. So thank you. Thank you for both of you for being on the air today.
Well, thank you so much for calling. And again, this is the Live Oak meeting that we're discussing. And I'm sorry, give me the website again.
www.friendshouston.org.
Friendshouston.org. And they're on West 26th Street, a couple of blocks east of Ella, between Couch and Beavis. I love that name,
yeah.
Beavis. How can you forget it? And it's a really lovely group. You're listening to KPFT 90.1 FM. I am Mike Honig, sitting in for Hitaji Abdulaziz. I normally do a show called Think Wing Radio, which will debut December 11th at 10 p.m. after Technology Bites. And now we're going to go to some belated weather and traffic.
All right, belated weather and traffic. We have, we're currently at 39 degrees here in Houston, overcast, low tonight of 34, partly cloudy with possibility of some rain. We have mostly cleared accidents, but still causing trouble. I-10 Katy eastbound at Eldridge Parkway, a stall at West Sam Houston Tollway southbound at South Sam Plaza, and Hardy Toll Road southbound at Cross Timbers, still causing trouble. We have a new accident, the 650 block of West Bow Lane, and also a major accident at the 8,000 block of Sharondale at Belfort Street, 11,000 block of Beamer Road, and the 4200 block of Drake Street at Fairmont. And now back to Earth 101, being subbed by Think Wing Radio.
The phone number, we are taking phone calls. We're in like the last 10 minutes here, but we are taking phone calls, 713-526-5738. You're listening to KPFT 90.1 FM Houston. I am Mike Honig sitting in for Hitaji Abdulaziz. Shameless plug again, I will be doing my own show, Think Wing Radio, debuting December 11th at 10 p.m. after Technology Bites. And today we're talking about Quakers. And Anne is telling me that she has a question, and my engineer, who so far, I have to say, is doing a lovely job.
Yay, thank you.
You're welcome.
I was wondering, actually, after hearing you, maybe the comparison or between Quakers and Unitarians.
Ah, that's interesting. Well, I'll tell you, I have never been to a Unitarian church, but actually our meeting actually does quite a few things with the Unitarian church in town. They're both peace churches. They're both very liberal, sort of not necessarily Christocentric, but they do have a church and they do have a minister. And so it is different. I've heard tell that the Unitarians are a little bit more intellectual than the Quakers. The Quakers tend to be more experiential, and the Unitarians tend to be more.
I think in my lay sort of general knowledge way, I think the Unitarians tend to be more higher power centered, but they are much more open to how you approach that higher power, whether it's through a Christian belief or an Islamic belief or Sikh belief. In other words, they embrace the many ways that one might seek a higher power without judging. And if you go into a Unitarian church, they have about half a dozen religious symbols in the architecture to symbolize the fact that there is more than one way to reach God.
Okay.
So I think that in terms of a difference between Unitarians and Quakers, I think as you get to the more Christocentric Quakers, they get closer. But I think that still the programmed Quakers are still looking at a means of approaching God, whereas Unitarians are looking at a broader context. That would be kind of my sense.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay. Do you feel like that kind of responds?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. We have John on the line. John, where are you calling from?
Good afternoon. Here's a quick question. As Quakerism, whether or not that's the right word, I apologize if it isn't.
That's a great word.
Applies towards the government. I know that obviously we've seen a lot of pushback from Christian-based and Catholic-based organizations and churches as it refers to the tenets of Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act. So my question is, how do the Quakers view the role of government and edicts like the Affordable Care Act? And I'll take my off. Answer off the air. Thank you.
Thank you, John. So I guess I might interpret that as John asking, where do the Quakers stand on rendering unto Caesar what is Caesar's and rendering unto God what is God's?
Yeah. We are not political as such. We're sort of more social justice oriented. And I'll just speak for myself. We haven't spent a whole lot of time in meeting talking about Obamacare, but I think it's a matter of social justice. And I think most of us are, I'm perfectly happy to contribute my taxes for that purpose. Now, we do have, a sizable number of Quakers who are peace tax protesters, and
peace tax protester meaning that they are happy to pay their taxes, they just want to withhold the part that might go to war.
Right, and there's various mechanisms for doing that. Some meetings will actually escrow the money that would otherwise have been paid for war. Some Quakers will actually live below the poverty line, so they don't have to pay taxes. Some people just don't pay taxes at all, and that gets into a fun situation.
Yeah. IRS frowns on that.
We don't have any peace tax protesters in our meeting, I don't think. I would say in our meeting, I'm not aware of anybody that doesn't like, you know, we, I think in general agree that there needs to be a government and it needs to, you know, do the right thing and promote social justice for sure.
Okay.
And not go to war. We don't like that.
Yeah. War should be a last resort. Diplomacy before war. Alex, you're on the air. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Houston.
Okay. What is your question or comment?
So I didn't catch all of this program, but quite a bit of it, and I've heard a number of questions about differences between Quakers and others. And one thing that comes to my mind, and maybe Susan can comment on it, but is that my understanding is that there's a heavy emphasis on the values that Quakers stand for as opposed to any dogma. So, and those, have you all talked about the five values?
Yeah, the testimonies.
The testimonies.
Yeah, okay. And so that's, you know, sort of comes to mind. And anyway, there's that. And then because of the history also of, we were talking about government, the issue of prison and the history of imprisonment of Quakers, Quakers have some views on power and authority over people and what that means. So I'll just take any responses on the air.
Just let me ask you real quick, Alex. You seem to know a little bit about the Quakers. Have you had association with Quakers before?
Yes, I'm actually a member. I'm a member of Live Oaks.
Oh, cool. Well, thank you so much for calling and contributing and asking that. And I have a lot of admiration for your meeting, by the way.
Thank you. All right, I'll listen on the air. Thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Well, the early Quakers, actually, one of their big contributions was prison reform. That was a big activity of theirs to minister to the prisoners in prison, because at the time, in prisons, nobody provided food or blankets or water. And I think that they would also work for justice in the judicial system. And as I understand it, those efforts led to quite extensive prison reforms, as far, you know, now people, the prisoners are fed and they're given beds and whatnot. And, Quakers were imprisoned. A lot of Quakers were imprisoned. Right now I would say that the Quaker focus right now, one of the focuses is restorative justice. And I would say in general, the Quakers don't believe that imprisonment is a way of promoting a just society.
I'm just going to, we have about a minute left. I want to give Laura a chance to get on the line. Laura, you're on the air. Where are you calling from?
And I just wanted to add to the discussion in reference to Friend's work in the world for social justice and equality. We have the oldest religious lobby on Capitol Hill. It's 70 years old, and it's the Friends Committee on National Legislation. We actually, it's a Quaker lobby in the public interest of people, and we lobby for things that is in keeping with our testimony.
We've got about 10 seconds.
Yes, and the American Friends Service Committee is the social arm of the Friends, and so anyone that's interested, please check it out.
Okay, thank you so much for calling, Laura. My name is Mike Honig. I'm sitting in for Hitachi. My guest has been Susan Long of the Live Oak Friends. Strongly suggest, if it's something you might be looking for, check it out. Live Oak Friends, West 26th Street, between Couch and Beavis. I do a show called Think Wing Radio, and I have a website, thinkwingradio.com and thinkwing.org. And I'm guessing we're down to the last couple of seconds, so thank you very much. And remember, slower traffic, keep right. It's not just a good idea. It is the law. Have a great night.
I'm Dr. Lorenzo Cohen, director of the Integrative Medicine Program at the MD Anderson Cancer Center, and I'm the host of Living the Anti-Cancer Life. Cancer has now surpassed heart disease as the number one cause of death in the world, but cancer is mainly a preventable disease. That's right, we can prevent the majority of cancer in our world by making some important lifestyle choices. This may surprise you when it seems that every one of us has either dealt with a cancer diagnosis directly or indirectly through family or friends. I'll be discussing how to lower your risks and improve outcomes for those with cancer, not just one way, but several, through stress management, nutrition, physical activity, the environment, and social support. Tune in Thursday, December 12th at 9:30 a.m. Central Time to the Community Spotlight segment of Open Journal for Living the Anti-Cancer Life, where we'll discuss the environment and cancer and how to reduce your exposures that increase cancer risk. This is 90.1 KPFT, Houston.
The end of the year is quickly approaching, and soon enough, it will be time to do your taxes. Before the holidays go into full swing, why not get a deduction right now? As a nonprofit educational organization, KPFT serves a vital need in our community. We provide an outlet for the arts, music, ideas, and local people and groups doing good deeds. With mounting bills, we could